Called Like a Makeover.
Their marketing is very good.
Clinics with five-star reviews selling miracle cures.
I left that place thinking I found myself a solution.
But it's your body that pays the price.
I had one cheek higher than the other, one cheek further out from my nose.
Before and After, a new series on how medical hype spreads online, who profits and who pays. Search for Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jez, I'm not being crass here, but when we talk about size, sorry, when it comes to countries,
okay,
do you think we have like an inbuilt bias? A bigger the country is, kind of the more status it has or the more weight it has?
Sort of yes and no in my head, because if you look on the global map, the prominent countries in my head, you know, when you're trying to think of countries on the map,
yeah,
I think you sort of mentally gravitate towards the bigger ones that you can identify,
yeah,
off your mind's eye. But also,
except for England,
the UK, yeah, tiny,
yeah,
which inflicted all sorts of good and terrible things around the world.
Yeah.
Tiny, tiny landmass.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think yes and no.
But I do think there's something about actually occupying quite a lot of space on a map that is definitely about staking out territory.
Yeah, but people have this phrase, right? Take up space,
yes,
be seen,
yes,
be recognised. And it applies to maps, I guess, equally.
Which is why for a long time there's been a rumbling about the kind of world map that we use. And it erupts every now and then, and it's erupting now, and I think we should talk about it.
Stuff that's grabbing our attention. Now, something a little bit different today, Jules, as you say, this issue about maps and what they represent,
yeah,
politically, culturally, yeah, has been bubbling along.
Now, I had genuinely never really thought about this properly, but earlier this year there was an article in the New York Times about the African Union, so a continental group, 55 countries, endorsing a campaign calling for organisations around the world to replace the Mercator map with alternatives.
Which is the map that most of us are familiar with,
yes,
right? It's the rectangular, mm-hmm, map you see on classroom walls.
Yep.
And
it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It is basically the map. And it was created in the 1500s by a German cartographer, and it was for navigation purposes. So it was when people were travelling around the world by sailing boat. All good intentions, and it was very useful for navigation purposes, but it distorts the sizes of the continents because you're getting a sphere and you are laying it flat.
Which is actually kind of a feat of physics in itself. You couldn't possibly, yep, like take a basketball,
yes,
cut pieces into it and then lay it completely flat in the ground. You're going to, yep, get lumps and bumps,
yes,
here and there. So the Mercator map was created,
yeah,
to allow sailors to travel in a straight line,
yes,
when they had no other navigational tools,
yeah,
at the time, things like satellites. So there was a good reason why the Mercator map, it wasn't a political or a racist,
no,
kind of,
yeah, exactly,
you know, basis,
exactly,
for its creation.
Yeah.
There was good reason for it.
Yeah. And but it's as it turns out, there's something you compromise. You either compromise the size or the shape. So areas near the poles, like North America and Greenland, they've been enlarged to create these constant lines of bearing, and Africa and South America shrunk. And so we have a completely distorted perspective of it. And I wonder if Donald Trump knows that Greenland is not that big. Although it is about the size of WA. It's, yes, just not the massive continent that it appears to be.
And Africa, conversely, is actually a lot bigger than the Mercator map shows.
Right. Greenland is depicted the same size as Africa, but Africa is 14 times the size.
And then you get
Greenland.
Antarctica. I'm always struck by this. Antarctica on the Mercator map,
yeah,
spans the entire bottom of the projection, which is basically makes it look the same size as the equator, the,
yeah,
same,
yeah,
latitude as the equator.
Right. So if you were trying to, this is what you can fit into Africa: the United States, China, India, Japan, Mexico, and much of Europe, and there'd still be space left over. So you can see why Africans are saying, you know, we need to change this map.
Yeah. So the African Union Commission Deputy Chair Selma Malika Hadadi told Reuters that it might seem like just a map, but in reality, it's not. The Mercator map fostered a false impression that Africa was marginal, despite the fact that it's the world's second largest continent with more than a billion people. So since 2018, a campaign called Correct the Map has been led by advocacy groups called Africa No Filter and Speak Up Africa. And they've been working towards changing this map that is largely used in tech companies and in schools. So we don't need the Mercator projection these days for navigation.
We do not. So we have other ways to navigate.
So what alternatives could there be? Have you seen some of the other projections? Because they're kind of pretty wild. I'm not quite sure any of them is kind of all that great, to be honest.
I should mention as well a website that my son pointed out to me, thetruesize.com. It's quite fun. You go in and type in a country that you want to that you're interested in the size of, and then you can place it elsewhere in the world to see how it actually compares.
How does Australia look when you move the Australian continent to elsewhere in the world?
It looks like the same size as the US. And look, it takes up really...
Almost not much of South America.
Well, that's a lot of South America. Look at that.
Well, it's not all of it.
It's not all. Oh, you were thinking we were going to gobble the whole thing up.
No. Is that a bit of cultural hegemony there?
Over here. Oh, yeah, Africa. It's not. Oh, but look at how big it is in Russia. Whoa, what?
I see. You put it just above Russia and it's
takes up a lot
massive.
Of space. Anyway, quite a bit of fun noodling around on that. Look, they do have some alternatives. There's one called the Gold-Peters projection. And it perfectly preserves the land size, but the shape becomes pretty wild. So it's really this is the difference, which is split between size and shape. But I have to say, look, obviously the fairest way to look at the Earth is to study a globe.
Yes.
That is the best and most accurate way. But have you got the Gold-Peters there? Because you do, when you look at that and think Africa is half of the globe, it does make you wonder whether we people hold biases as a consequence of that map.
I 100%, because I'm looking at this map, I feel like it looks wrong because I'm so accustomed to what the Mercator projection looks like that this looks kind of nuts.
Do you think there's something subliminal in seeing that map? Because we know that these the African groups who are concerned about the map believe that, that it's been part of the colonialist project to kind of diminish it.
So here's what Correct the Map says. It says maps shape how we see the world. They influence how we think about countries, continents, and power. When a map distorts the size or shape of countries, it can reinforce stereotypes and unequal worldviews, especially when Africa is shown to be much smaller than it really is. The Mercator map isn't just about misrepresenting the size of the global south. It's about power and perception. This needs to change. We call the world to correct the map by adopting the Equal Earth projection, which more accurately reflects the true size of Africa. You know, I have some sympathy with that view, but the problem is you correct one portion of the map, you're going to distort something else, right? Right. Because there is, as you say, there is no correct projection.
You distort shapes.
Yeah.
But size. So if you think size is the most important, then you stick to that.
Yeah. It is also true, Jules, that the original point, let's not forget, of the Mercator map was to be a navigational tool for sailors.
Long gone. Yeah. It doesn't matter what the intention is now. I think the fact that that's the one we've replicated over centuries, I do think there's a point about it being, you know, people internalizing this sense of marginality.
There's an interesting thing too. You know, when you look at the, you know, most maps, including the Mercator map, and it shows the United States as being buffered from a security and defence point of view, by massive oceans on either side.
Yeah.
There's another projection called the One World, One War map, which was created by Richard Eads Harrison in 1942. And his argument was that the traditional Mercator projection of the world showed the US to be isolated from major wartime strategic theatres in Europe and Asia.
Yeah.
And he argued that the Mercator projection was useful in the age of sail and steam. But when you tip the map on its head and you center the North Pole, the United States suddenly becomes a lot more proximate to places like Russia, North Korea, Asia.
Mm.
And it shifts, I think, the perceptions of exposure from a defense and strategic and security point of view to some of these hotspots around the world. And so he said, you know, looking at the map from different directions helps shift thinking around where you need to kind of fortify your national defenses.
Right. I reckon we need to, I mean, there was a scene in the West Wing where cartographers, like concerned cartographers, came to see CJ and Josh and were putting the argument for needing this Peter's projection map, and they wanted it taught in every school. I think they should teach other maps in schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And they shouldn't just rely simply on the same one. I think it's really important to even have that discussion. But you know what I would quite like to see? There was an oceanographer called Athelstan Spilhouse, and he designed a map that focused on the world's water.
Oh.
And so it centres on Antarctica, and it shows the oceans as this uninterrupted body of water. And Australia, Africa, Europe are whole, and Asia and America are stretched along their coasts. And that, very, have a look at this.
Oh, wow.
Look at this in notes as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's not a continuous kind of, it's not a rectangle or a circle. It's kind of these odd shapes. And the ocean is the bit that's coloured in, and everything else is white.
Yeah. Why do we only ever focus on the
land? I think this is really helpful, isn't it, to understand proximity.
Exactly. All right, we'll put that in the show notes as well. I don't know, Jez. I kind of am interested in the chat, and I'm interested in the fact that
where people are being asked to eat local oysters and donate the shells, which are going to be crushed up and dumped into the ocean to rebuild reefs and to help the ocean. I mean, we know there's been so many issues around the coast of South Australia. It's been really devastating to watch, you know, how the ocean is doing, the beaches. And so people are being asked to eat local oysters, shellfish of any kind. They've been ground up, the shells being ground up, and they'll be sent to the ocean under this multi-million dollar program to help regenerate reefs. And they're going to be they're going to help do that by dumping these clumps of limestone into the ocean with a soundtrack of snapping shrimp playing on underwater speakers to lure baby oysters in, and that will help filter the water and build some resilience into the ocean community there. And
so
I think it's
good.
Such a great idea. Do you remember a few years ago there was that whole scandal around needles appearing in strawberries?
Yes.
And everyone rallied behind the strawberry industry and started buying strawberries. I was making like strawberry cake, strawberry soda, sort of strawberry compote, jam, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a really kind of lovely way of kind of supporting local industry, but kind of each of us finding a way to be a bridge builder for a local industry, for the community, for the ocean in this case. So
having an
it's just such a terrific idea.
They must also get thrown out so much, those shells.
Yeah, exactly.
To actually reuse them is really clever.
And also underwater speakers of baby shrimp playing.
Honestly, I think I've heard that soundtrack. I was once researching underwater noise and they're quite, it sounds like pop, pop.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Anyway,
cute.
So that's going to work. All right, my pick is, what's your view on Vegemite?
Love it. So took me some time to get there as a migrant child, but yes, love
thoroughly
it.
Thoroughly in now.
Yep. I put it like in my roast chicken now as well.
Your roast chicken?
Yeah, part of my marinade, yep.
What else is in the marinade?
Oh, like just other random bits and pieces, like whatever I find. I don't kind of really use a recipe. I just kind of, you know, whatever's going. Yeah, but Vegemite's good for a bit of colour, bit of salt,
bit of zest.
Umami. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Big night out. Have some toast with a whack of Vegemite. Well, now in Victoria, there are 12 prisons. They're not allowed to have Vegemite.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been banned since 2006. Corrections Victoria says it interferes with narcotic detection dogs. Inmates used to smear packages of illicit drugs with Vegemite in the hope the odour would distract the dogs from the contraband. Well, it also contains yeast, which is also banned from Victorian prison, so no pizzas, because of its potential to be used in the production of alcohol. Although this is actually a moot point. This was an issue a decade ago. There were these media reports that remote Australian Indigenous communities were using Vegemite to brew alcohol in bathtubs.
That's quite ingenious, if I may say so.
Yeah.
Like just
yes.
Maybe not appropriate, but that's quite impressive.
But the then US owner said, no, the manufacturing process killed the yeast and Vegemite can't be fermented into alcohol. So I don't know. That's a moot point. But there is one prisoner who is very unhappy and he's taking Victoria to court, saying in his lawsuit that withholding Vegemite breaches his human right to enjoy his culture as an Australian. His name's Andre McKechnie. He's 54. He's serving a life sentence for murder and he's taken it to the Supreme Court of Victoria. And he's suing the Department of Justice and Community Safety as well as Corrections Victoria. Now, it's scheduled for trial next year. So what he wants is a court declaration that he's been denied his right under the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities Act to enjoy his culture as an Australian. Now, this act guarantees, this is the wording, all persons with a particular cultural, religious, racial or linguistic background the right to enjoy their culture, to declare and practice their religion and to use their language. He also wants a declaration that the defendants breached the Corrections Act by failing to provide food adequate to maintain his well-being. Jez.
Look, I have very little sympathy for murderers.
Yes.
But I'm interested to see where this goes. As a test of the law and the definition of Vegemite as
a cultural practice.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like it's a bit of a stretch, but I'm not a lawyer. So
it's kind of a wild thing, isn't it? But you're absolutely right. Victims of crime advocates are saying, and lawyers saying, this is frivolous and it's offensive to victims' families. Yeah, victims don't have any rights. That's a tricky one, isn't it?
I think, you know, with prison, you forfeit certain things.
Anything.
You know, I mean, it's not about being inhumane, but I feel like robbing someone of Vegemite is maybe not up there. But I'm interested in this as a test of the law.
I am interested in a test of the law as well. But then how far would you go? Beer, quality of life as an Australian.
Yeah.
What else would it be?
What else? A bit of good sunshine.
Salt water.
Yeah.
Yeah, sunshine. Is there anything you'd have to eat?
I do love a roast chook, like a supermarket roast.
Madeline Jenner.
Very nice to catch up. See you next time.
See ya.